20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, Packers fans? Happy Tuesday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at AndyHermanNFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. It's Tuesday. You know what that means. The one and only Justice Mosqueda at JUMOSQ on social media. Of course, AcmePackingCompany.com. If you're not visiting AcmePackingCompany.com every single day, what the heck is wrong with you as a human being? Justice, it's great to be back chatting with you. How are you doing, my friend?
Yeah, I'm doing great. We actually did a little walkthrough thing about what the site is going to look like in August. We're going to have a big turnover there. Everything should be moving way faster than the flow of the site is kind of going to be like almost like social media.
Okay.
So I was always skeptical of change. I'm a man of routine, if you can imagine. So I went into it being like, all right, let's see how they're going to mess this one up.
Usually that's the case.
Gotta hand it to him. It looks good. Happy to share with you guys in August.
Here's the big question.
A bunch of trainings.
That's what I think. I was going to ask you how much is it going to be on your end that you've got to do new interface on the back end to promote, to do articles and stuff, which is just a nightmare.
Yeah. They're going to give us a little sandbox thing in June and all sorts of stuff. So yeah, I get to play around with it before it actually goes live, but yeah, I'm actually pretty excited to share that with people.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So. Well, excited for you guys for that. I'm sure it's going to look amazing and we'll make it even more so that everyone should be checking out AcmePackingCompany.com every single day. All right, Justice, we've got some fun stuff to discuss. We're kind of in the, we get OTAs and mini camps OTAs next week. So there should be a practice that I get to attend and we'll have some stuff from that, knock on wood. But up until then, it's kind of the doldrums, but we've got a little bit of kind of unique stuff in regards to rule changes and things like that that I want to get into, plus a lot of other stuff. So let's start with that. I think the main topic of conversation, I think I broke my producer's mind on the radio today as I went over the potential playoff seeding changes. And it seems to be that there are some deep-seated feelings, no pun intended, as to whether or not this change should go through. We finally got word just before recording this, or a little bit earlier, I guess, that the actual proposal is in fact to basically top seven teams with records, and that's it. I guess the one thing I need clarity on, Justice, I haven't had the opportunity to see it. Does this still mean that a division winner that's like 8 and 9 would, as the division winner, get a playoff seed, or is it literally just the top seven teams in the conference regardless?
I believe the division winner automatically gets in. And that's the concession that they've made.
Yep.
People certainly have. Yeah, I guess. That part, honestly, is the one that I'm the most wishy-washy on.
Okay.
I'm like, you know, I could take it or leave it. People really want divisions to mean something. I don't know if they do. I genuinely don't know if they do, right? Once we get into the playoffs and stuff. Cool, your team went 9 and 8 and won a division title. I just don't know if it matters, right? I know people talk about rivalries and stuff like that. There's, you know, with the expansion teams and how we've reworked divisions and division rivals, like the Packers are in a good spot in terms of geographic location, history, all those things. Most of the NFL isn't like that, right?
Yeah.
Like the Falcons and Saints used to play in the NFC West, right? So like the Southern divisions are like a new made up thing, basically.
Yeah.
Right. And I know that's not the end all be all. But again, I also come at this from a college football perspective too, where I'm like, you win your conference. Great. That doesn't even mean you're going to even make the playoffs. Right. Even if you only lost one game in a season, right? Like the NFL, if the theory is, you know, we're doing all this stuff for salary cap purposes and the draft, and we're trying to make this almost as even as possible going into the season, then shouldn't your, I just don't understand the overweighting of division games. You're already playing those teams. Like that's kind of already baked into the record. So that's just always been my opinion. I understand people feel differently. I just genuinely like look at the schedule, right? Like, who do we play last week of the season? Is it Bears?
Vikings.
Viking, like, that's not going to feel super different than playing the Ravens the week before. Right?
No, I mean, agree with that.
So, I know what people want to do, the, you know, Harry High School rivalry games, all that stuff. Like, it means more. And I'm just like, but does it? I really don't think it does. Like,
I think for some it does, for some it doesn't, right? Like, I think Packers, Bears, Packers, Vikings, to an extent, Packers, Lions, like you get some of those. I don't know. I can't speak. I don't know how much of a rivalry like Texans, Jaguars is. Like, maybe it is. Maybe it's not. I have no idea. Again, probably what, like, is Buccaneers and Panthers a huge rivalry? Probably not. I think probably some of the NFC East ones are. I think probably some of the AFC East ones are. Some of the AFC North ones definitely are. But I don't think, to your point, it's not uniform across the board. I'm fine with, and maybe even slightly pro, hey, win your division, get a playoff seed. I don't hate that. And I think far more often than not,
it doesn't come up enough that it really matters to me.
That's sort of my point. Like, that's my point. Yeah.
The seeding of, like, I don't know how many times we've seen like the fifth seed in the playoffs have like the second best record or third best record in the conference because, you know, they just happen to be in the same division as either the one or two seed. Right. So that comes up a whole lot more than like that Seahawks team that went against the Saints that, you know, they were what, 7-9 or something like, or yeah, something like that.
And then one. Again,
yeah. So I'm not too worried about, you know, division winners in or out. Again, I'm way more wishy-washy on that. But as far as like top seedings, like, yeah, just put the top teams. Like, the NBA doesn't deal with this stuff at all.
Yeah, right?
The NBA is just like, we split it down conference wise and we'd roll the ball out. And the West has been so dominant that I think, you know, there's probably going to be conversations in the NBA soon about like, do we just get rid of conferences too? It's just you know. Every team is equal, and maybe you have some protected rivals or something like that. I mean, that's another thing. Like, look at college football, right? College football got to what, 16-team conferences? And they were like, all right, divisions are done. You get to pick like one or two protected rivals, and then the rest of the schedule is just kind of mixed up. Like, so I don't know. Like, that makes sense to me, man.
When you get to, I got to think for a second, which is never a good thing. When you get to an 18 game schedule, should it not just be you play the 15 teams in your conference and then the three teams in your division twice? That'd be a perfect 18, right? You don't even need to go outside of your conference.
Yeah. I don't know how the NFL feels about that. I mean, the NFL hasn't really shied away from cross conference games, right? When they went to 16 to 17, they added an extra AFC versus NFC matchup. So
yeah, I kind of like that though.
I actually don't know how that would work.
So you play every team in the NFC once and then Lions, Vikings, Bears twice.
Yeah. And you just split it down the middle and you're like, this is the AFC, this is the NFC. I mean, it's like old school baseball, right? Before they started doing cross league stuff.
The other thing that I would say then, if they want cross pollination or whatever, do it that same way, but they would never do this probably, but then mix the four teams that you're with every year. So like mix the conferences. So like this year, it's going to be the NFC East, the AFC East, the NFC North and the AFC North as like this conference. And they're all going to play each other once. And then you play your rivalry teams twice. And then the Wests and the Souths are going to be in the other one. And then next year it's going to be, you know, one team comes over here, one conference comes over here, another goes over there, whatever you want to do it. But, that's how I would probably do it. Just again, I think from a competitive balance, not that the NFL's ever really cared about competitive balance. We'll talk about that a little bit as we get to some of our scheduling conversation later. But I think I would kind of like that, to be honest. Although I would miss, if they never played the AFC teams, I think I would miss some of that to some extent.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it would suck if you never got to see Mahomes and Lambeau his whole career, right?
For sure.
Like that. So Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, how many times, even just in general, did Brady get to Lambeau? Once? Twice? Maybe.
I think twice.
Yeah.
Twice.
It wasn't much either way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember I looked it up because they were supposed to be playing the year he tore his ACL. So he lost out on a Brady game that year. Yeah, that was so weird, man. That would never happen in the NBA and MLB. I know they got more games and stuff like that, but they also do a lot more cross stuff than the NFL does.
Just a few rule changes away or CBAs away from a 31-game season so you can play every team one time.
I mean, I think there's real conversations about, like, I mean, the NFL's got to be looking at what happened with the NBA stuff, right? So, like, I saw, man, who was it? I think it was Tom Habistro was on with Bomani Jones, and they were talking about star injury rates and stuff like that just because of how many reps these guys get already, right? I mean, here's another thing, right? Trey Amos, okay. This is going to be a smooth transition. Trey Amos was a guy that we talked about, and I was like, I don't understand why he wasn't a guy that we would have considered with, like, the second-round pick, right? We brought him in on a visit, all this stuff. Ends up coming out through ESPN that he ends up having a back injury that dropped him down draft boards. So it's like, oh, okay. Now this draft is making a whole lot of sense because Amos was, like, the one corner – the one defensive tackle, right? The two positions people are really complaining about the team not addressing in the draft, who was actually, like, a value pick, right? Because, you know, those guys flew off the board super high, who was kind of, you know, medically cleared, off the field cleared, but apparently he wasn't medically cleared, right? He had the back injury. And, you know, the NBA is doing all these combine tests and stuff like that when they do the medicals, and they're like, I can't believe this guy is 18. When they're looking at these kids' ankles because of how much they're hyper-specializing early on and, you know, all that stuff. It's something like so all-stars getting injured over the last 3 years, you know, prior to the playoffs or during the playoffs, compared to, like, 93 to 95, the percentage has gone up, like, 700%.
Yeah.
Right? So injuries across the board, across sports, all that stuff, like, up, 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 up. These guys are only getting more explosive. These guys are only getting bigger, right? Both of those things contribute to injuries. And then these kids are getting miles and miles and miles put on their legs before they even get into the league. So, like, the whole dynamic of the way we think about players, and we're like, you know, their peak is really at, like, 28, right?
Yep.
Well, it's like 28 is, like, where you hit the hard wall now, where you almost hit, like,
what was 30. Tatum, 26, 27, 27, maybe?
Yeah.
Torn Achilles?
Torn Achilles was, like, an old man's injury, right? That happens, you know, Aaron Rodgers and stuff like that. That's not something that usually happens with young guys. But now it's, like, your peak is, like, 25, right? So, and that's
just turned 27 in March.
How late the NFL gets these guys into the league because the relationship with college football and all that stuff. So, yeah, man, get used to injuries. That's the name of the game right now in the NFL.
I can be very confident in saying this. My son is never going to play in the NFL or the NBA, but it's already, I mean, just to kind of stay up to with everything from, like, a soccer and basketball standpoint, like, it's year round. He's in soccer year round. He's in basketball almost year round now. He's in gymnastics. He's in speed training. Like, and he goes to, like, 6-7 things of, like, sports, like, every single week. I try to get him, you know, some time off every now and again, usually in July, just to, like, get some rest and recovery. And a lot of, like, the gymnastics and the speed training is trying to make sure that he's running the right way and adding some bendability and pliability to his body. So it's not just, you know, whatever, but, like, he's 11 years old. And there's already so many miles that are going on his body at age 11 that I'm, like, I'm very cognizant of it already. Of, like, I don't know how this is going to work. Like, I want to be careful with it because, again, as you continue to go on, however long he ends up playing for, I know one of the players on his team, his sister was just about to go play college soccer, tore her ACL for the second time. Like, it's just, it's kind of crazy. It's happening younger and younger and younger in all of these sports. And it's just all of these fields now that are a lot of these turf fields, younger and younger, which is probably not great. Yeah, it really adds just a lot of wear and tear on these bodies very, very young.
Yeah, things were a little different even when I was coming up. So I graduated 2012. And so, like, I grew up in rural Oregon. I grew up like an hour out of Portland. So you can make the drive if you want, but it, you know, it's a drive.
Right.
There's national forest in between the town I lived in Portland. So it's not like there's anything in between. So you couldn't really specialize in a sport. You know, I was aware, you know, there was an AAU movement and stuff like that in basketball. You could do summer baseball, which is what, you know, a lot of people here specifically do, which is crazy to me. Like, kids are missing football. Like, even when I was coaching, kids are missing football practice to pitch doubleheaders in June. And I'm just like, yo, what? Like, your arm is going to fall off, dog.
Yep.
And I guess, I mean, you're seeing that in baseball too, right? All that stuff. But it's at least good that you're having your kids, you know, do different kind of movements. Right.
Yep.
And it's not just jumping on hardwood, you know, flexing the ankle all the time and stuff like that. The turf field stuff is crazy to me. I always played on grass. Again, rural Oregon, we're used to, the Pendleton Buckaroos and the Pendleton Roundabout, which is like a 20,000 seat rodeo stadium. It's like literally dirt, right? You couldn't find a turf field in central to eastern Oregon, right? But out here in Portland, everything is turf. Like, when I coached in 2020, everything is turf, man. And you know, my old high school, they put in a turf field a couple years back, like 2 years back or something like that. And they're just like, yeah, it's cheaper. I'm like, it's not good. Like, even just standing on it for a full day, right? Like, I'm sure there's people who are listening to this and, you know, they're waiters or waitresses or something where they're standing on hard floor all day. And you feel it. You feel it. It's not the same as standing on grass. Even my fat ass when I was coaching, right? standing on the sideline on grass is totally different than standing on turf for whatever it is, 4 hours.
I mastered the little crouch of like, yeah, I got to get my, it's almost like the golfer's crouch looking at the ball. That was my, I would do a lot of crouching when I was in soccer, looking very intent of what's going on the field. So
see, my problem is I can't get down on a knee, 'cause I had two knee surgeries on my left knee and I have like this like big ass divot in it. So it like hurts when I go down on my left knee. So I guess I could go down on my right, but yeah, the crouching pro move.
Too many rodeo fields that you played on as a kid. That was the problem.
There's only one.
So we talked about the playoff seeding. I think you and I are both for the change in playoff seeding. There's a slight change to the tush push of just basically no pushing or pulling.
Yeah.
Here's my take. I don't care. Just figure it out, decide it one way or the other and move on. And I don't care.
There's just no way this thing is going to pass. If they change the verbiage and it's no pushing, no pulling, like that's only, the people who didn't vote on it before, there's not going to be more people voting because of more restrictions.
This change,
right? Yeah. And there's just so many funky things that happen. You would have to get really, I think I had to get more specific instead of broader. I think it was a lot easier just going back to like the old rule where it was just like, hey, don't push a guy. I know people in the APC Slack were like, literally just make it specific to like the guy who's taking the snap. Right. But then I have seen people say basically the same thing when, you know, the first time we brought this up, right. Where I was like, okay, what happens with like normal quarterback sneaks if we're doing this from a player safety perspective, right. 'Cause those aren't particularly safe plays. What happens with inside zone, right. Like any of these inside zone concepts and stuff. And people are bringing that up now. I'm like, you know, the slippery slope stuff is a fallacy. But you get into a weird spot where you're like, okay, here is where we draw the line with player safety and just mashing humans together behind an offensive line. I could take it or leave it. just tell me what the rules are going to be for this upcoming year. But with the rule change, the verbiage change where they're like, you can't assist this player at all. There's going to be so much weird stuff on like fumbles and like the exact second that a guy recovers the ball. And now you can't push or pull or anything like that. I think you're opening a can of worms with the way that they kind of phrased it.
Here's my one thing that I think would have been great that they messed up on. After the Packers got all the flack of like, oh, they just can't stop the play. I wish they would have changed it so that just Philadelphia couldn't do it. That would have been the ultimate, just absolute troll after of like the changes that Philadelphia, and it just needs 24 teams to approve it. So Philadelphia can, go against it all they want. It just would have been, obviously I'm being facetious, but just put in there, only Philadelphia cannot do the tush push. Everyone else is totally fine.
Well, that's again, another reason why I'm like, just let them keep doing it if they want to do it, is because, Jalen Hurts, that is a developed skill set.
Yeah.
Right. Everyone hasn't been able to do it. We've been able to get through it with like Tucker Kraft on some of those snaps and stuff. Right. But there's been teams that have attempted the tush push and they can't figure the damn thing out. And it's because their quarterback can't squat like a, Tucker Kraft or a Jalen Hurts. So
yeah.
That's an ability. So it's kind of hard for me to like want to neuter an ability, it's like, no, they worked hard on that. Like it's a skill. Like that's what this game is supposed to be.
Stop it. And then teams will stop running it. That's the easiest way. So yeah, I'm with you.
The only thing I have, like the Commanders ending in the playoffs. That sucked. You don't want that where the ref is having to say basically like, let them punch it in or I'm just going to give them a touchdown like that. That stinks. I don't know how you solve that. And maybe that's why we're having all this discourse is really that series of downs. But we haven't seen that outside of that game, I don't think. So
don't want to try to make too much of a deal out of one scenario, but as much as you can. But yeah, you obviously don't want that to repeat itself if at all possible. I'm intrigued to see what happens with that one because it feels like the NFL would probably like it banned, but I don't know that they're going to have the votes. We'll see. Onside kick. 1 yard closer for the kicking team in order to have a better, it's interesting to me that the league wants more onside kick recoveries. It just feels weird to me, but I guess they do.
Yeah. So we did a huge deep dive on this with Optimum Scouting when I worked with them, when they first got rid of like the surprise onside kick type situation. Right. And the truth of the matter is, the success rate that we're seeing right now is pretty steady with what obvious onside kick attempts have been throughout NFL history. So wanting to juice that number is a little weird to me.
Yep.
So like Tom Pelissero said, it's like 6% last year. I don't know what the sample size is. Can't imagine it's very big. Usually it hovers around like 9%, year over year. That onside kick number that you usually see like historically referenced to like before the rule and then now was super inflated by surprise onside kicks. And this doesn't really address that. So if we're just looking obvious onside kick percentages, this seems to track with what we're historically used to. I just think fans don't have a good concept of that. Like, the NFL should be a front, like there should be PR blasts from the league when these rules come up and say like, look, this hasn't really changed in, obvious situations. Yeah. It's just, people remember like the Saints Colts Super Bowl surprise onside kick stuff. And they're like, we want more of that. The surprise onside kicks weren't super effective. They definitely were more effective than obvious onside kicks. But it's still not a good bet. So I don't understand wanting to juice obvious onside kicks. And then from a team perspective, like I don't want the Packers attempting surprise onside kicks. Like it's a bad bet historically. Right. So yeah. If you want to keep that thing banned or, you can't have surprise onside kicks, that's fine with me. So I don't know what happens with this. I don't know why they want to juice it. I don't know how big of a difference 1 yard closer to the opponent matters, right? That 10% difference between the two sides. So yeah, I guess, but it doesn't really move me.
Yeah, I'm just I kind of want the team that's doing better in the game to just win more often than not. And so I don't have a huge issue. I guess if it keeps the games closer at the end, that's probably what the NFL is thinking of, you know, maybe there's more drama that way, more people keeping their eyes on the TV. But yeah,
I do think this is another thing too. The NFL's made a lot of progress on like fourth downs, all this stuff, right? Game clock, all that. There's still teams that have no idea how to manage the clock. They're calling the timeouts after the 2-minute warning, all that stuff when they should be calling it before the 2-minute warning. There's teams that are still being conservative on fourth down. And then they get into a point where, you know, they have to go for that onside kick. I think it's better to incentivize those teams to kind of play more efficiently during the game and realize where they are in the game flow. And it's like, you can't punt that ball because you're not going to get two possessions back for right. the rest of this game. That is not how this works, right? You're putting the ball down 9 points with 7 minutes left, right? And then they don't score, but they take 5 minutes off the clock. You get the ball back. You score a touchdown. That's 7 points, right? But you're still down one, and that's why you have to attempt the onside kick
yep.
with a minute left in the game. And it's like, you should have gone for that fourth down. Because all the data, all this stuff tells you should have gone for it there, right? There's no promise that you're going to get the ball back a second time. And I think the game would be better for that. So
you have a way better chance of picking up a 4th and 8 than you do getting an onside kick and therefore go for the 4th and 8. Yeah.
No. Yeah, for sure.
I hope at some point, Justice, that everyone, and specifically from a coaching standpoint, and even like the graphics that they show on the TV and everyone is so well educated on the like scenarios when you should go for it and when you should stop the clock, not stop the clock, call timeouts, etc. We go back and watch these games in like 20 years and are like, what the heck were they doing back then? Like not calling these timeouts appropriately. It is maddening at times.
You know, what's a crazy thing? There's that one point where I thought I was going to write a book about NFL history through the lens of like numbers and quarterbacks and
be awesome.
We'll see if we ever get there. I wanted to do like interviews and stuff like that to basically present it as like, these are the numbers. Where am I wrong? And then interview people. But when I was doing that, I did a couple deep dives into certain games and stuff. And some of the decisions that were made were kind of crazy, and I didn't understand it. There was this old idiom that was basically like, you don't take points off of the board. So you're in a field goal situation, kick the field goal, make it get roughed. You get it an automatic first down.
And they declined it.
And they decline it.
Just mad.
I was like, whoa, what is going on here? And the saying was just like, yeah, you don't
never take points off the boards.
I'm just like,
it's the dumbest thing
ever. Yo, what the hell is going on here? Obviously, the offenses were a little different. I don't know what, you know, red zone percentage looked like or anything like that or field goal make rates, but it's certainly something you don't see in this game. So, yeah, I mean, I could totally see how we look back in 15 years and we're like, what the hell is this? I mean, just look at the NBA, right? And everyone talks about it, like all the 3-point shots and stuff like that. I remember watching Marcus Aldridge, right, for the Blazers, and he just like lived in the mid range. That was like his thing. Like, there's not a lot
even happen anymore.
Like that, yeah, at all. Like everything's in the paint or it's, you know, on the perimeter. So, but yeah, games change quick. That's one of my big worries when people bring up like whatever you want to do on fourth down to replace the onside kick. First of all, what are we setting the percentage at, right, that we want to hit?
Yeah,
because is it the we're getting rid of the surprise onside kick stuff, or is it post and you just want the 9%? And if you want the 9%, are you going to incentivize good quarterback play? And then also, like, there's going to be innovation there, right? The game is different when you play the game, right? So if you want to add a bunch of 4th and 15s onto NFL teams' playbook and study and situations and stuff like that, they're going to get better at it.
Yeah,
they're gonna get better on at it offensively, right? So, I just so much discourse about this onside kick thing, and I'm like, I don't know if it's broken. All we did was take away the surprise onside kick. I don't know if it's broken.
What do you think has been? I'm actually very happy about where the NFL is at, but what do you think has been the biggest outside of maybe time management and some of those sort of things, yeah, and sort of the taking the points off the board, what do you think has been the biggest analytical change in football? Like in NBA, we're just seeing a crap ton of dunks and threes. Like it's just layups, dunks and threes. In baseball, it's home runs and strikeouts, like launch angle and trying to get, you know, big hits is obviously the name of the game. And things have changed quite a bit in that regard. You know, hitting for average. And again, these things ebb and flow, of course, but that was the big thing recently. What do you think this has been the biggest thing in football that's changed analytically? That was a tough question on the spot.
I think they've incentivized motion a lot. Okay. I think, you know, the analytics people are kind of beating the drum on that. I think RPO.
Sure.
We're still not seeing it at the rate that college football is by any means.
No, we're not.
But yeah, I guess the idea of lining up in a bunch of different ways, presenting a bunch of different looks, but you're running only a handful of plays, right? McVay lives off of that. Shanahan lives off of that. KOC, LaFleur, you know, schematically, especially in the run game, like it's kind of been dumbed down a little bit. Like the Packers don't even run in like outside zone that much, right? They don't like the old, you know, boot action stuff.
I'm hoping they get some of that back, but we'll see.
Me too. So I think that's part of it. I would say probably the game management stuff is top tier, right? Like the Packers have a guy, I'm spacing on his name. He used to work with the now he works with the quarterbacks. He used to be the game management guy for him. He's from Vanderbilt. I have a buddy, Keegan
Connor Lewis.
Yes, Connor Lewis. I have a buddy, Keegan Abdu, who works for Next Gen Stats, who worked with him. They work together at Vandy, and he says really nice things about him. But there's a reason why the game management, or like the analytics guy, right, is his job on game day is to do that type of stuff. You know, go for it, don't go for it. Like, I worked with XFL. I was, you know, director of analytics, and like one of our first jobs was like, teach coaches when to go for it and when not to. And even then it was a little tough because basically like different parts of the field, you get more or less aggressive because of how you weight punts and field goals. And that was hard for guys to wrap their head around because they just want to know like, okay, fourth and three, we're going for it. But it's like fourth and three, what is the score? How much time is left in the game? How many timeouts do you have? And where are you at on the field?
All fourth and threes are not created equal.
Yeah. So that stuff gets a little tough, which is why you probably have a guy like Connor Lewis and Matt LaFleur's ear, right? So,
and for me, what I'm buoyed by is the fact that to me, some form of like the NBA, and I love three pointers. I love dunks. And I love the NBA. So I'm not like super upset about it, but it's definitely changed the game in a real way. Sure. And baseball, it's definitely changed.
Just Gasol? Gasol is the guy who just like completely changed his game. Baseball, they banned the shift.
Yes. Like all these things have like legitimately changed. So I'm actually very happy with like most of the changes in the NFL are for the positive. More motion is good. More better game management is good. Like going for it on fourth down more is good. So like all those things are better for football. There's nothing that is like taking away the enjoyment, which I think is a very positive thing. So, knock on wood, of course.
Yeah, it's not like we're seeing a bunch of like intentional safeties or anything like that. Like I think that would hurt
just
the product.
Like teams being like, screw it, we're just going deep for like the first like two downs every time. We're just taking 60 yards, and then we're gonna go try to get 10 yards on 3rd and 10 or whatever the case may be. Like we're trying for shot plays like almost exclusively, and if we get in on 5 of them per game, we're in a better position or something. Like so far that has not happened, and I think that's probably a good thing. This is not a rule change that is up for debate currently, but it is up for debate in the court of public opinion. NFL draft lottery, you in or you out?
I'd rather get rid of the draft than have a draft lottery.
Whew.
I guess the best way to do it.
Oh, don't do that to me, Justice.
Just have like National Signing Day.
I don't like it.
And they're just added to the free agent.
I hate it.
I don't think, you know, people always bring up like, oh, it's going to be hard for Green Bay to compete against these like big cities and stuff. And I'm like,
oh, no, it's nothing to do with that. I just love the draft. Like, I love the draft season. I love all of that aspect of it.
I don't know how different it would be from like a consumption standpoint if there was like a national signing day type thing. But I will say, like, the if the money's even, man, like, there's so many guys from small towns down south and small towns in the Midwest. It's not like a lot of these college programs are in New York City and Chicago and Los Angeles and stuff like that. So, you know, when you have collective bargaining like the NFL does, I don't think it would be drastic in the way that people think it's drastic. Plus, we just saw Shedeur Sanders, right, who is first, second round talent, fall down because there wasn't really a market for him at quarterback. There's only so many spots in the league, right? So the idea that like Matthew Golden wouldn't have signed with the Packers because the team's in Green Bay or something like that, that rings hollow for me. I really don't think that that would be a worry.
The veterans, I think, would hate it more than anything because you're going to pay big money
into their pie.
Potential. Like, you're going to pay big money for potential.
Yeah. Well, and they're available, right? We see markets move all the time based on, like, Fred Warner got, like, 20-something million, like, $21 million a year or something on his latest extension, right?
Sure.
Since his last extension, he had only been passed as the highest paid linebacker by one person, and that was Roquan Smith. And it's because, one, there's not a lot of top tier linebackers, and they're not hitting the market, right? Roquan was traded. So if guys don't get to market, your position value does not increase, right? So now we have this tiny little window that is the difference between a Jamin Smallwood, who's making $15 million a year as an off-ball linebacker, started one season with the Jets, right?
Yep.
And Fred Warner, who's going to be a Hall of Famer. And the difference between them is $6 million a year. I mean, that's like as much as we're paying like Brandon McManus, right? Yep. Or
it's true.
Isaiah McDuffie, a third linebacker, the situational guy. So, yeah, I mean, the veterans would hate it. For sure, because they kneecapped rookie contracts in 2011. So it would, they would all be in the same pool of money. So veteran salaries would almost certainly go down.
Big time. Big time. I absolutely think they would. Now, granted, if like eventually those players will have been paid better as rookies, so it maybe evens out. But for that class of players that did not get paid that way as rookies and then were ready for ineligible for second contracts, they would get totally hosed.
Get it on both ends. Yeah, that's not great.
Not great at all. Speaking of, you know, all pro linebackers that are still out there, over under set at one half game. How many games or over under on Devondre Campbell playing a half game in his career remaining?
I'm going under, but like maybe someone gets injured. I mean, the 49ers didn't outright release him after the playoffs because they thought he was going to sign with someone else, right? Which is weird. They must have at least thought that there was somewhat of a market for Campbell. I can't imagine that there is much of one based on.
I'm taking the under.
Yeah, I'm going under, but like, I don't know, man. There's like, again, like four good linebackers in this league. And if an injury happens, I could see a team pulling the trigger, but I doubt he's going to be worth it.
Packers schedule is officially out. What were your initial takeaways or just kind of overarching big brain thoughts on the Packers schedule?
No Christmas. Love it.
Yeah, you got saved on that one.
Yeah. You know, the early bye week is interesting. Probably not great. I know people just want it like right down the middle every single time. I like that we got the Bengals early because the Trey Hendrickson situation seems like a mess. They're leaking that, you know, they offered him $28 million and their fans are like, he should take that. They're like, that's like $7 million per year less than Danielle Hunter. And then who knows about what the guarantees look like when you're dealing with the Bengals too, right? You're not going to be able to bend them over a barrel like you did with T. Higgins for every contract you signed. And the thing that's really weird with the Bengals is they like really want to find value with these players, right? They really want to lowball these guys on these contracts. And that doesn't really work because, like, you might get T. Higgins signed right now, there's a good chance in a year, 2 years, T. Higgins is going to the Bengals and is like, we need to rework my contract because that was absurd that I signed that.
Agreed.
Right. And then you're in another Trey Hendrickson situation where you're just trying to get. So like Trey Hendrickson's like, you know, reworked his contract already a couple of times. But what he basically what they basically have done is make him whole with year one, like 1 year cash flow. But that doesn't solve the rest of the contract. So you're having to go back and forth every single season talking about we got to make you whole and all this stuff. So like Trey Hendrickson might sign another deal that'll pay him, you know, 28 per on paper. But he's looking that as, okay, they made me whole for this year. We'll go back to the negotiating table next year.
Yep.
There's nothing preventing that. So I'm happy we get to go against the Bengals. I still don't think Shamar Stewart is signed because they wouldn't give him the injury waiver, which is crazy.
Yep.
For rookie minicamp. I don't think the second round pick is signed. So I'm happy about that from a pass rush perspective, right? Happy we got Denver away late. Denver is a team that if you catch them the first 2 weeks of the year because of that elevation, it's a huge factor. Their win percentage is up there. Like win percentage, first 2 weeks at home, you know, at elevation, it's comparable to like Nick Saban's Alabama teams. Like, and the Broncos haven't been that good, right? Right. They're not winning at that clip regularly. So, you know, that's nice that you get to avoid that because that's, you know, one of those tricky, like, brutal pulls that you can get in the schedule. From a rest perspective, right? Packers get way more rest in the first half of the season than they do in the second half, you know, versus their opponents. It kind of evens out by the end. I think they need to rack up wins to kind of start the year. I think it's something like till week 11, they have like the second easiest schedule from like, if you look at like win totals and stuff like that, like their you know, opposing slate. And then the last 2 months of the year, just kind of a hell stretch. So that's kind of all my thoughts on.
The only other thing that I had as well was the backloaded road games, and more specifically, three of the last four on the road. And more specifically than that, if you do not get a home game in the playoffs and are a wild card team in the playoffs, you're potentially looking at three of your last four on the road, then road game, road game, road game, Super Bowl, if you can make it that far. That's a lot of travel and road games at the end of the year if you're trying to make a late season run.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, the second half of the year is definitely, like, wins are going to be harder to come by than the first half. Point blank period. That's how
it's going. Big time. Very intrigued. I think it's going to be a very fun slate of games. I think it's a fun schedule all the way around, but there's not much taking your foot off the gas, which maybe is a good thing, but it's definitely going to take a hell of an effort to kind of get through that.
So this is the other thing. Goal package. I pray for you. You got the Thursday game and the Monday game?
Monday game.
Right?
One of the first things I noticed.
They gave them all the division games last year. And then this time around, they're like, all right, better make the trip because if you sell the tickets, we're pulling away your season tickets now.
So do you think there's also some benefit on the other side where maybe fans from Philly and Washington are less likely to travel on a Thursday and a Monday night? Or if it was a weekend game, maybe they'd be more likely. I was wondering about that too, of like, yes, it's more disadvantageous for Milwaukee fans and maybe there's more tickets on the market, but maybe Philly and Washington fans are less likely to go on a weekday night on the road.
Less likely than like Detroit fans are, right?
Yeah.
Now. They're just traveling to everything.
Everywhere.
So
yeah.
Maybe. Yeah, from that perspective. Yeah.
Do you want to talk about the rest advantage, disadvantage thing of like the LaFleur era? No.
So I think it's interesting from this perspective, right? So the Packers, people have looked into net rest, right? Which is,
yep.
Andy, if you're coming off of a Thursday game, I'm coming off of a Sunday game. We play the next Sunday, right? You're getting, what is that, three more days of rest than I am, right?
Pittsburgh game, yep.
Yep. Since 2019, which is when LaFleur was hired, the Packers rank last in, you know, the 6 or 7 years. I'm bad at counting right now. I think it's seven.
Six. This would be the seventh, I think.
Okay. Going into the seventh. So, but it's including that number. So it is seven. So over that 7 year time frame, the Packers rank last in net rest. And it's not really been terrible the last 3 years, but the end of the Rodgers era, it was particularly bad. especially 2022. The number one team is the Detroit Lions, and the number two team is the Dallas Cowboys. And the Lions are like plus 50 days. Like they could lose like 20 days off of that and still be in the conversation for like the most rest in the league. And the Cowboys are, you know, a tier ahead of the next team too. And it's really this thing where it's like the Lions and Cowboys are basically free rolling rest at this point with the way everything is scheduled out because of that Thanksgiving game, because they're not playing anyone on Thanksgiving who has a different differential than them for the most part. But then the next week, they get the benefit of having that extra rest before playing this team that, you know, in this scenario, right, played a Sunday or something like that. So they're basically getting plus rest every year. And then on top of that, they're getting more rest than that. Like that would only be like a plus 4 differential or something like, well, for a single season.
Yes,
over the 7 years, right, it would be something like, ballpark 20, right? Yep. But they're like plus 50. So they're like already first, and then they're getting all the benefits of the Thanksgiving games. So, yeah, it's working out nice for the Lions and Cowboys. I can't envision the NFL starting to move around that Thanksgiving game. I think it's just going to keep on happening. I don't know how they solve that rest differential situation, which is like probably the most important thing that you're looking at schedule-wise, right? Like we already know who all the opponents are. We know who we're going to play home and away. We know that when by the time the regular season ends, what matters is how does all this stuff sequence, right? And how many teams are we playing where it's like Philly off of a bye, right? We get to play Philly off of a bye and things like that. And then our bye, we get the mini bye to play the Browns, and then we get another bye right after that. It's like, I don't know if we needed the rest that time.
And when we get Thursday night game or the Thursday game Thanksgiving, the Bears play Black Friday. So we should have had a 3-day rest advantage, but the Bears counterfeit it by playing Friday. And we only get a 1-day rest advantage.
Right. Exactly. So it's all that stuff. So I don't know how you solve it unless it's like,
I mean, AI has just got to be able to do the schedule by next year and just to like eliminate stuff.
The way that you could solve it is by having a bye week for those teams going into the Thanksgiving game. The opponents of the Lions and Cowboys. But then do you want that big, like, they're paying a lot of money for these Thanksgiving games. Do you want that big of a rest differential just promised out the bat? And it's like, well, I don't know. But then do you want to move these Thanksgiving games around? It's like, dude, if Lions fans and Cowboys fans are used to Thanksgiving games and they have the appetite for them, go for it. Because I think it'd be, you'd get fewer people that are happier about hosting Thanksgiving games than them. Like, if you're the New York Jets and you play on Thanksgiving out of the blue, like I'm sure you don't love that situation.
No, probably not. No, that's a fair point. I don't think it's a major issue, but it's definitely one that as you like see it stacked up over the course of time, you're like, oh man, that is actually like legitimately a real thing. It's the first thing I always go over on the schedule every single year when we break it down in detail is the rest advantage, disadvantage to see where it's at. And if it's anything close, I don't really care. But if you get like a negative 15 or like a plus 15, you're like, ooh, all right.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough one. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. All right. Talk to me about Taylor Algersma, not specifically the quarterback, but specifically maybe some potential opportunity to utilize a lesser known avenue to maybe keep him on the, as like an extra player.
Yeah. So because you sent me something when I sent this to you too. And this is a lot of the response that I got, which was, you know, they look up the international player, you know, international player rules for the NFL, right? And the exemption and stuff like that. But what pops up is IPP, which is a different thing, right? So you have the international player exemption, right? Where you get the extra guy on the 90-man roster, you get the extra guy on the 16-man practice squad during the season. And then there's the IPP, which is the league takes a guy, they coach him up for 10 weeks, they go to like IMG Academy, they get trained, all this stuff. And then they have a basically like a pro day workout for NFL teams. Now, these two things used to be the same, right? It's not too long ago where, you know, Kenneth Odemegwu, right? He was a guy who went through the IPP program and got picked up by the Packers, was their international pathway or their international exemption player. And, you know, you had a certain pool of players, right? And then the NFL would say, okay, you know, these two divisions or just this one division, like you guys get a freebie on an international player this year. Now it's every team has one every single season. And there are more exemptions than there are IPP players coming through. So teams are looking at other players. So an example of this would be Alex Hale. Alex Hale never went through the IPP program. He's the backup kicker for the Packers. He played football at Oklahoma State. He's an Australian, by the way.
Yep.
So Elgersma, from a player who, or a scout that I've talked to who works for the IPP, is apparently eligible for that free roster spot. So the Packers, from what I understand, could take the exemption designation off of Hale, place it on Elgersma, cut Hale, and then be still eligible to sign like another American, for example. The way the international rules work now, this is the text I got, it's based around having two max years at the prep level in America. So if you were here for two seasons, you know, your junior and senior season in high school here, you're still eligible to be considered an international player. I was told if a guy is born in Fiji, spends 2 years at Mater Dei, which is a massive football program in Los Angeles, and then plays 5 years at Ohio State, he meets the international player definition and is eligible for the exemption. So, you know, we're talking about 5 years. You might get, I mean, there's still guys who have like 6 years of eligibility.
6 years, yeah.
Right? So you could have spent your last 8 years in the United States playing football. You would still qualify as an international exemption. An interesting player from that perspective is David Ojabo from Michigan. He was picked in the second round, edge rusher, all that stuff, right? Packers fans probably remember him from the draft four years ago.
Right on, yeah.
He played 13 games for the Baltimore Ravens last year. He was born in, I believe, Nigeria, moved to Scotland, and then at 17, he moved to the United States. So he falls just underneath that two-year maximum that you could be, you know, a prep in America, right? He has been listed as the exemption player for the Baltimore Ravens. Now, where things get weird with the Ojabo situation, and I don't know what the hell the Ravens are going to do, you get the extra roster spot in the offseason, right? Great. Yep. Free things. We love free things, right? 91 is bigger than 90. What happens when he makes the team? You have an open exemption spot and no one trained.
Yeah.
How do you feel that, right? That, so there is like this weird thing where it's like, it's a freebie, it's an advantage. But if the guy actually makes the roster and he's not the guy that you want to stash on the practice squad and he's going to play 13 games for you like Ojabo did, I don't know what you, I don't know the value of freeing up that. Yeah, I don't know what the value was of freeing up that spot. What I do think is interesting is that kicker two versus QB 3-4 is like now a thing that could be tracked for for, you know, the season or cut downs or whatever. And the other thing too is if you're getting a freebie with Elgersma, what does that mean for Sean Clifford? Right? That's probably
not great.
Probably bad news for the boy.
It's not been going great for Sean Clifford ever since that overdraft in the fifth round.
Yeah. He went like five picks after Shedeur Sanders' pick, which is crazy. Talk about markets, man, supply and demand and how they change from a year to year basis. Clifford's class had no quarterbacks.
Yeah. What was Spencer Rattler last year? I think he was 150th pick in the fifth round. Sean Clifford was.
He's got
the 149th. Sean Clifford went one pick before Spencer Rattler.
There we go.
That is absolutely wild.
We were broke and we could not afford a backup.
I have one final question for you, and then obviously I'll open it up if there's anything else you want to get to. Yesterday, we did our off-season superlatives, and I went through one of the questions I had is, if you could have made one move differently as GM of the Packers this off-season, what move would you have changed? It could be a draft pick. It could be a free agent that you would have signed or been more aggressive in trying to sign a trade. You could have traded for DK Metcalf, or whatever that thing is. Is there anything that stands out to you of like, yeah, they really should have done this?
It would have been something I would have avoided. I probably wouldn't have paid the Banks deal.
Yeah. That was the one that I kind of went over of like, I don't hate it. I don't mind it. I like him as a player.
It's just a lot. It's a lot of money and a lot of contracts are about to come up in Green Bay. And, you know, even with like the Ellen Jenkins stuff, right? Like, and so I, one, first of all, respect Wilde, Sco Ducks, you know, both Oregon fans. So we're on the same team here. I recorded a thing with Nagler last week and he brought up and he was like, you know, this is Ellen Jenkins' like only opportunity for like leverage and stuff like that. And I was like, completely understand that, but you can't pay that guy more. And if you do, it has to be on an extension at like a $15 million average per year, basically. And that's not close to, you know, what he's going to get on the market. So if this was a situation where it's like Ellen Jenkins looking at Aaron Banks's money and saying, well, if Aaron Banks is worth that, I at least deserve an extension worth that. Well, your money wasn't up.
Yeah.
Right. And we already spent that money. So you are a better player than Banks. You should be making more than him, but you're not. And we did overpay him a little bit, but we can't give you that extension now that we gave him that money. Right. So I think there's a little bit of that that overcomplicates the situation. Plus, like when we're talking about the offensive line competition and, you know, Rashid Walker, Jordan Morgan, Anthony Belton, and Sean Ryan competing for two spots. I don't think you need two of those guys on the bench, right? There's probably a better way if you're just holistically looking at it from a not talent acquisition standpoint, but like team building.
Roster building, yep.
Right? There's probably a better way to use assets than that. So, you know, you can't know that Belton is going to be available
right
in the second round when you pay Banks, but Banks is probably the one I would have been like, that was, he might have gotten a little too aggressive on that one. No, he hasn't played a game in Green Bay. Maybe he becomes an all-pro and stuff like that. I have to end up eating crow. I'm fine with that, but that's, you know, gut check. That's the one that I am probably like, you probably want that one back a little bit.
I want you to rank these three contracts in order of which ones that you would have done for Green Bay. Aaron Banks, 4 years, $77 million. Mekhi Becton, 2 years, $20 million. Tevin Jenkins, 1 year, $3
million. So Jenkins is tricky because of the back.
Yep, right. He's never been healthy. Never been.
Yeah,
healthy.
He's just always has the back. If you can get him to play 17, he's the most valuable one of them, right?
Yep.
I do like Becton. He seems to have his head on straight now, and so yeah, I mean, I basically reverse order. Yeah, cheapest to most expensive. That's the way I would have done it. But again, there's injury risk with Tevin Jenkins. There's, I guess like previous motivational stuff with a guy like Mekhi Becton.
And just not having Jeff Stoutland, the issue with right. Mekhi Becton too.
Right. Right. Plus, you know, this is a guy with motivational issues. What happens when he gets paid? Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a real thing, as crappy as that
it's true.
Makes it sound to be. I mean, it does seem to be a factor, but Becton was out there going on visits and stuff. Right. Yep. And he wasn't a guy who wasn't dealing with injuries or anything like that, which is usually why you see guys go on visits. So yeah, I mean, I'm sure the Chargers were like, we really want to, he signed with the Chargers, right?
Yep.
I'm sure the Chargers were like, you know, we really want to know what, how this guy ticks before we give him this money, even though it's only a 2-year contract. So maybe that informs you a little bit, but
for sure.
Yeah, I just think that there are different opportunities. I mean, even beyond those guys, like once we started talking about what free agency looked like in the second wave of free agency, right? I remember us being like, you know, maybe there's a couple edge rushers, defensive tackle board completely decimated, cornerbacks flew off unless you wanted to take, you know, an injury risk guy or something like that, right? But the offensive line was the one that kind of like held sturdy, and there were guys out there if you wanted to do it. So yeah, I guess Banks is my answer for the one I would have wanted back. I don't think I would have had the inclination to give either Banks or Hobbs the the contracts that they ended up getting, but I don't think they're bad deals. I just think
Agreed.
They were aggressive. They were aggressive. Yeah, they were aggressive contracts. They Hopefully wanted those out. Players.
And if there's any team that deserves the benefit of the doubt when it comes to free agent contracts, it's been Brian Gutekunst and the Packers in his era. He has not missed on many. Jimmy Graham probably really the one that kind of stands out. And outside of that, he's been pretty rock solid with everything. So, all right, Justice, that's all. I have other things for you, but we got to get out of here. So anything else you wanted to go over?
No, man. It's May 19th. So
I'll save the rest for next week, I guess. You are incredible. I always appreciate you a ton. What you got cooking on acmepackingcompany.com this week?
Man, I'm going to start doing like a preview series, I think, because I just don't know what to write about and I have time and I'm supposed to be on the clock. So it's either that or like I'm going to end up playing video games all summer. So I'm going to start doing a preview series where I just kind of look at the Packers' future opponents. I kind of have like the outline of the Lions one. I want to run it by people who know the Lions very well before I hit publish, but you know, just kind of outline like, you know, this is a team that the Packers are going to play, right? Here are the things they do. Here are their players. What has changed since last season? You know,
I love that.
Where are potential points of strength, points of weakness? And yeah, hopefully that'll get me through until the start of training camp, or you know, you guys start tweeting out videos from mini camp or whatever, or OTA. So
probably won't have videos, but I will have, well, maybe some like,
not with that attitude.
Yeah.
Come on.
I don't need to be the next big B and getting kicked out of practices for videotaping and whatnot, but, I will definitely update it with words as descriptive as I possibly can before they realize it's too much of a problem. But you just do what Nagler does and just decide that he wants to play video games. So he's going to do a Twitch channel and play Madden every morning and have people watch along with him. So there you get the best of both worlds.
I don't need people seeing my stick skills. That's my problem. I've been in Madden leagues with buddies who work in the media, you know, some buddies in the league and stuff like that. And it's just like a reoccurring joke that like, I'm good in the regular season, and then as soon as the playoffs start, it's just choke fest. Like I'm going 17-0, 16-1 in the regular season, and we've probably played – this is over multiple years, by the way. This is like 5 years of us playing in these like online Madden leagues and stuff. I think I've won one ring.
Step your game up, Justice.
Not great. I mean, these are like, you know – 20, 25 person leagues. I think we hit the max in the college football game. I think that was like 32. I'm pretty sure.
It's incredible.
The recruiting gets nuts. They shouldn't have made the AI images as soon as they started. They made AI images, like all those generators started coming out this summer. The college football game dropped.
Charles McDonald. You're going to be sitting on your deathbed and being like, that damn 2018 dynasty league that I was in, where I blew it in the championship game. You're going to be thinking, that's like, you're going to be thinking about those things.
The Mexico City Golden Eagles and Malik Willis just could not come through.
Damn it, Malik. No, I absolutely love that more than you know, but
I can't go deeper into the video games. I haven't touched the controller.
I'm the same way.
November. So
I don't even want to get into the fall off that I've had in video games where like do you remember when they had the big Madden tournaments at each of the NFL cities?
Okay.
Yeah. They were massive. And then the winner of each city would go to Vegas and play in Vegas. And I played in the one in Green Bay, made it all the way to the semifinals, just nuked everybody. This is like 8 games. And it was like, people like were literally being like, who the hell is Andy Herman? Because I was literally like, and they were like 3-minute quarters because you had to get through these quick. And I was still like, it was like 28-0 every single game, just dominating. And this was Michael Vick cover Madden. And with Vick, I was just unstoppable. And I remember the game to this day, the semifinal game. And it was a dude that played with Vikings and Randy Moss. And he was really good. He was fantastic. Him and I went back and forth. We each scored touchdowns every single drive that we were on. And like, as you got on, I think it was like, now we're up to like 5-minute quarters that like expanded as you got to like the semifinals and whatnot. And there's basically like a handful of plays that I called every, like one of the five every single time. And all of them were successful and I could run whatever. And he was like starting to kind of get to know this a little bit by this point. And so I ran, there's one other play that I kind of liked a little bit. And I ran this one other play and threw a freaking pick on that one other play. And it was the difference in the game. And then still, it came down to the very last play. He kicked a field goal to win. I swear to God, Justice, where this field goal was kicked from and what that meter looked like, he botched it. And I thought for sure it was a miss. And somehow that thing went through the uprights. He went to the finals, won in the finals, and went on to Vegas. I don't know how he did in Vegas, but I was that close. Called one stupid play the entire game. Otherwise, probably would have had it. I think about it to this day.
I didn't know about competitive gamer, Andy. I didn't know you had it in.
I was literally, and again, people can believe whatever or not. When it was online in PS, I was legitimately top 100 online ranked pretty consistently when I used to be. This was before podcasting days and everything like that. So I had like that's how I, you know, kind of spent my time. Anytime I had in the free time. This is before kids as well. So pre-kids, pre-podcasting, pre-writing, pre-everything. And like, I was also to the point where like when I was ranked top 100 or whatever, if I lost a game, man, there was a long walk after I lost a game, a very long walk. And I will readily admit, I am not I am not an angry person. I am not there were some definite times where controllers had to be sort of got like out of the rotation dislodged from certain areas of the building after those. But yeah, they were intense. It was fun. I miss it, but those days are unfortunately over.
That's good. That's funny.
Yeah,
I'm glad you told me the story.
And now like I literally could probably play. I would probably play my 7-year-old, and I would probably be a coin flip as to whether or not I would beat him.
I don't want to bore people too much, but like, so I never got a game system after my PS3.
Okay.
Right. So I had my PS3. I think the last Madden I had was like maybe like 14 or something like that. I don't even know which guy was on the cover. Probably like the Calvin Johnson one. And then I didn't get a new game system until the pandemic happened and I got laid off from XFL stuff. So the game that I entered in, you know, I hadn't played a game of Madden in like 6-7 years, something like that. And then I hopped on and I was like, this is a completely different monster. I have no idea what I'm doing with my hands.
Yeah, it's a nightmare. I found this. I actually had this on my phone. This is not top 100 at the time.
Screensaver?
I should have put it as a screensaver. But this is the top 100 in Madden 13. So Madden 13. I don't know if we can see. I was ranked 347 at the time. The Herminator.
There you go.
347. So I guess I can't prove top 100, but I definitely know I made top 100 at one point. But yeah, still top 350, I guess. I'll take that. All right. That's enough for us talking Madden tonight. At some point, you and I will have to have a Madden face-off, and maybe we'll stream it on the channel.
Oh, you name it. You name it.
I'll be there. Actually need to play a little bit before
we... don't have Madden this year. I only got the college football game.
All right. Well, I have the college football. I've never played it. My kids played it. I've never played it, but we digress. Justice, I cannot thank you enough. We'll talk again probably next week, although we've got Memorial Day on Monday. So we'll figure out something there, but I cannot always thank you enough. Follow him at JUMOSQ, acmepackingcompany.com. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL, and of course at Packaday Podcast. That's going to do it for us. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.